from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. Nice to have you with us today. I'm Gary Null. Now, for those of you who listen over the radio all across the United States and all the markets that we're in, and by the way, starting in June, we're launching into about 35 major markets in the United States, and more on that as we get close to those dates. But some people don't have internet, and some people are driving in a cab or out on a bike or walking someplace, and they'd like to listen over the telephone. Now you can. We're approaching 1 million minutes listened by our audience in just the last 3 weeks. Here's the number you call if you ever want to listen in by telephone. 832-280-0066. 832-280-0066. Just one of the new technologies that benefits a lot of people who don't have a lot of technology. Today I'm setting aside 1 day a week without guests, without investigative report, without major hard-hitting issues. Instead, the entire program I'm opening up for this audience to call in and ask whatever questions that you deem important or give us your input on any of the issues that we discuss on a regular basis. I do 4 different programs every week. Monday to Friday, Eastern Standard Time, I do the Gary Null Show at noon. Then on Sunday evenings, I do Talk Back from 8 to 9 p.m. On Monday evenings, the most popular show of the week is the Progressive Commentary Hour. And I want to thank the 200,000 people who are now downloading that weekly. That's a lot of people to be sharing that. And then on Wednesday morning on the East Coast from 3 to 9 a.m., 6 hours. On the West Coast, midnight to 6, on KPFK, our sister station. I've been there for almost 29 years with Roy of Hollywood, and I do all types of programs. So that gives you an idea of some of the programs you can listen to. Of course, you can go to the down and download anything from the archives. Now, today, the latest on health and healing, plus some important environmental information, and then we'll go right to your calls. Now, you can call anywhere in North America at 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. I'm going to give you the latest on raw almonds, how the USDA and agribusiness conspire to mislead consumers, from the cornucopia.org. Also, what you really need to know about tar sands in the United States. You were probably thinking tar sands, that's from Canada, Alberta. They want to make that pipeline. Obama's already signed on to the pipeline from part of that trip in Oklahoma down to Texas. Whole different way of looking at this. We have massive amounts of tar, oil, upwards of 19 billion barrels in the tar sand oil, mostly in eastern Utah, but we also have it in Colorado and Wyoming. So I'll give you the latest on that as well. Then debating the future of the world's water, because now it's almost certain that there's going to be a war between Pakistan and India over water, because India is diverting Pakistan's primary source of water into dams, what that means. But what does it mean here in the United States? We're running out of water also. And the latest from EchoWatch.com on gas hydrofracking and how they have brought out the heavy guns to flood the media, giving you the warm and fuzzy story about how there's no really problem with gas hydrofracking. Oh, yeah, there is, and we're going to share it. And then finally, from Harvey Wasserman, who has a program on this network, and a very good one, I might mention, from Weekend Edition, The End of the Nuclear Renaissance. The new nukes are on the brink. There's only 2 U.S. reactor projects now technically under construction on the brink of failure for financial reasons. We're going to give you this because it was Harvey Wasserman and other Carl Grossman who led the effort to close down successfully. They were able to do it, not one but 2 nuclear power plants. Now we have millions of individuals, including a large proportion of our radio audience who are joining together to work as one on closing down Indian Point Nuclear Facility in New York and Diablo. We're trying to close it down in California. So we're making an effort, big effort, and a lot more on that. So I'll give you the latest on why you should be concerned if there's a nuke near you. And it was interesting because about 5 months ago, I did a lecture up in Woodstock, nice group of people, and they didn't know there was a nuclear power plant near them. I mean, I just said, wake up, it's been 30 years since you've all done anything up here. Nice little community artists and casual livers, but hey, you got some serious environmental issues to contend with. So we'll give you the latest on nukes. So you see, we have a lot to cover, all interesting and all stuff that is not covered by the mainstream media. Let's begin. I always cite the scientific literature because I want you to know that the information has been there, is there, at a very high quality level. Now, why do I say that? Because how many times have we seen orthodox or mainstream science prove something, prove it irrefutably, but then not be it will not be applied by American medicine or healthcare or dietitians or public health advocates? They just won't use it, as if it doesn't exist. Then when you press them, they say, but there's no real good evidence, or it's not comprehensive, or it wasn't done in a major university, or it wasn't published in a peer-reviewed journal. Just on vitamins and minerals alone, we have 600,000 studies in peer-reviewed literature. So the problem is not, is there a lack of scientific quality literature and proof? We have tons of it, and that's why I keep citing it. This, for example, is from the Journal of Agriculture and Food Chemistry. And what are they saying? Berries for the brain. Strawberries and blackberries and blueberries. Quote, strong scientific evidence exists that eating blueberries, blackberries, and strawberries, and other berry fruits has beneficial effects on the brain and may help prevent age-related memory loss and other changes. And that's all in this article. The article by Dr. Barbara Hale and Marshall Miller point out the longer lifespans are raising concerns about the human toll and healthcare costs of treating Alzheimer's and other forms of mental decline. Okay, fair enough. There are 90 million of us over the age of 45. There's never been anywhere in American history the number of aging people as there are now. Now, let's just pull back for a moment and put this in proper perspective. We got 90 million people who are on the other side of the ticking clock of what is called senescence or programmed cell death. Now, every single organ in your body has its own biological clock. And so anything you do, absolutely anything and everything, can impact it. For example, if you're having a cola, you won't feel anything. You won't notice anything. But something happened. There's an artificial coloring in that, and that's a suspected carcinogen or known carcinogen. There's an enormous amount of sugar. This can adversely affect your pancreas there and will spike your blood sugar. And that's bad because that actually kicks in cortisol when you walk around with elevated blood sugar. That's really bad because excess cortisol then disrupts other hormones. And next thing you know, you're on a hormone roller coaster all because you had a bottle of cola. Now, if an adult has that, they can just be a little hyper. When a kid has that, they can bounce off the walls in the school, which almost always gets them a diagnosis of ADD or ADHD, and then suddenly they're on meds and permanently classified as mentally imbalanced and can spend the rest of their life fighting the urge for suicide or akesthesia, the inability to stay still, all because no one paid attention to what was in that cola. And the reason that we don't pay attention is because almost all the food commercials and beverage commercials are for the very substances that can hurt us. They're not good for us. And they have very powerful lobbyists and scientists for hire who say there's nothing wrong with that. Go ahead and have it. Moderation, all things, which is a misnomer because there is no such thing in moderation. Because what What if you're a 70-year-old diabetic and you decide to have some sugar? Nothing moderate about that. So what we're looking at now is this. Probably 50 million Americans in the next 10 years will end up with dementia, gross memory loss, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, ALS, and have to be cared for by others. More often than not, the first line of care is their parents, children. So you're going to have children who want to have their own lives and are frequently now with an empty nest. A woman, let's say, is 47. Her kids are now in college or out of college, and she can begin to look at the next stage of her life with new priorities, new interests, and new joy, new excitement, until she gets the call that her dad or her mom or both can't take care of themselves. And then she has to become that person, more often than not. Now throw in the idea that we don't have catastrophic medical insurance for the average American. In fact, the average American doesn't have medical insurance to help them with anything. But this is catastrophic care. When you go into some of these settings, you can be spending $500 a day to $1,000 a day to see that someone's taken care of. It's a lot of money. I'm going to deal with this later on in this week about why does it cost $1,200 to spend a night in a hospital bed in a regular hospital? That's no medical treatment. That's no drugs. That's no nursing care. That's no doctor care. That's no x-rays. That's nothing. Just sleeping in a hospital bed costs more than a suite at the Waldorf Astoria. How's that possible? Why does it cost $20,000 to do a heart operation? Just for the surgeon. Why? And when you start looking at where all these costs are, and we don't do that in our society, we just know that this year we'll spend $3 trillion, then that's where you start to see how wrong the system is and why doing more of it's not going to make anybody happy. Now you got 50 million people who are going to have to be helped. Where's that money going to come from? We don't even have enough clinicians, nurses, doctors, hospitals, or settings to put all these people. What are you going to do? So there's a great deal of anxiety about people living longer lives. Because today, when you live a longer life, you're not living a healthier life. You're living under chronic medication. People over 70 generally have upwards of 12 different medications. Most of these are not beneficial to the person at all, and frequently are counterindicated one to another. So wouldn't it make sense if you've got something that can literally overwhelm the entire medical industrial complex, that could bankrupt, but in and of itself, bankrupt the United States? We did the math in my office 4 weeks ago, and we're pretty good at doing these projected analysis and statistics. And I'm looking if 50 million Americans need critical care for dementia, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, you're looking at about $4 trillion a year just for that. Well, we don't have that. In fact, we have a shrinking tax base. So the income is less going in and more is going out. So you're looking at absolute and total bankruptcy of the entire country unless you start consuming healthier foods and beverages and exercising and stress management. That's why this simple study is so important. By the way, there are over 400 additional studies that I have just on berries. Why do you think I emphasize people to take your berry powders in the morning and the afternoon? Why? Because a combination of the berries is far more powerful than an individual berry. Most people, when they take some berries, they don't take a pint. They take maybe a quarter of a pint. They're not organic. They're sprayed with a lot of things, and strawberries are one of the most sprayed things. And those berries are good for you, but good compared to what? Good compared to the disease and state of damage and DNA damage? No. It's not going to reverse anything. In fact, almost a perfect diet will not reverse disease. It merely slows down the disease that we have. Therefore, it's important to really potentize. So drink a berry juice. Now, I'm out on the road, but I still found time this morning to have some concentrate berry. I had cranberry concentrate, wild blueberry concentrate, tart cherry concentrate, Bing cherry concentrate, papaya concentrate. These were in bottles and liquid, and I pour them in. And then I add at least five different compounding powders in very high amounts. And I'm good to go because my whole body then has got phytonutrients, antioxidants, high ORAC, protective enzymes, and chlorophyll. Why can't we just tell the American public and allow them to have a chance to do the right thing for themselves and their families and their seniors? I'd love to see if anyone in this audience has a senior citizen who's suffering from some form of Alzheimer's or dementia. Put them on, if nothing else. Let's say that you're limited in finances, or there's what's known as the hassle factor. It's just more hassle than what you're going to give it. Why not just see how many berries you can give? Berries, throw them into a blender, juice them. That'll give you a whole lot of berry concentration, and especially the raspberry and black raspberry. And then throw in some goji powder and some of the other powders, and see if you can start to see a difference, and spike it with vitamin C right up to diarrhea, right up to bowel tolerance. Just keep giving them vitamin C, and do this four or five times in a day. You got low glycemic, so it's not going to spike their blood, but you're going to see a big difference. I would imagine within 3 weeks, you'll start to see cognition. Now, this is without really repairing the brain with all the other nutrients we know can do that. This is just berries, so let's focus a little attention on this. Now, there's a new article in the International Journal of Global Energy Issues that says, and this was reported in Science Daily, quote, solar water heating pays for itself five times over, quote, an analysis on the energy and economics of a solar water heating system showed it to have a payback period of just 2 years. According to researchers in India, they report in the International Journal of Global Energy Issues on the success of the 1,000-liter system operating at a university hostel. The current focus in the developed world is on advanced technological approaches to alternative energy sources such as photovoltaic cells for solar power and harnessing wind and wave with elaborate systems to generate electricity. However, the cost of such systems may be prohibitive for some applications in the developing world. They also often ignore the fact that a mundane process such as simply heating water might best be carried out using direct heat from the sun rather than including a waste energy conversion step. And this was done at the Agriculture University at Maharishi in University. And what they found was that they had a 57% internal rate of return. Quote, solar energy is the only renewable energy source that has wide range of uses with commercial viability. Solar energy provides water heating, air heating, and electricity through various modes of applications. And they're right. So here's what I would suggest for people everywhere. Start with what is inexpensive and simple, and it gets you into the game. Everyone knows that in the 1920s and 30s and 40s and 50s and 60s and up to the mid-70s, you always had an attic exhaust fan. And then you had fans in your rooms. And no matter how hot it was out, you always had a breeze that was circulating through your house because you would take the hot air and you would vacate the hot air out because hot air collects in your attic. And you bring in cooler air. And in the process of moving that air, it cools. Then, of course, air conditioners came into vogue and people stopped using the fans. But your attic is where you have enormous temperature in the summertime. Now think of the people living in California and Florida and Texas and Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, Nevada, New Mexico. Your roofs collect heat. That then concentrates in the attic. That then forces the ambient heat in the house itself to rise. That means it's hot, turn on the air conditioner. And it stays hot all the time. In some places, it's hot 24/7. And hence, they're using the air conditioner 24/7. Now, for a couple hundred bucks, put on a solar panel, and a solar fan. What the solar fan does is the solar fan has a thermometer on it, and it will bring out the heat throughout the day, and that fan keeps exhausting the heat based on that small solar panel. They're inexpensive. Only take an hour to install or so. And so suddenly, your attic is not 170 or 160. It's about 60 degrees less. That means the house itself is not as hot. So that's one way that we can really cool down our homes without turning on the air conditioning. Then get a hot water heater that is solarized. You'll put a couple panels up on the roof. You'll run water through those panels down into your hot water tank with a special heat and exchange gauge on it. And what it does, it heats up your water. You don't need gas and you don't need electricity. It keeps it hot. Now, you don't need it scorching hot, and why people, you know, have their heat up at 120 degrees doesn't make any sense. Let's say 85 to 90 degrees is fine for a shower and bath and cooking and cleaning and doing the laundry. And then once you see, gee whiz, this is great, I made my money back, it paid for itself in a year, then go to the newer, smaller, far more powerful and far less expensive solar cells. And those are coming out of Germany and other countries, and they really work for the rest of the house. You can even heat your swimming pool. A solar heated swimming pool will raise the temperature of your pool by about 10 degrees beyond the ambient air. So let's say it's 70, your pool is now 80 and swimmable. So a lot of people have heaters in the pool, and that just is a big waste and a big polluter. So no need for those. And those heaters are not inexpensive. Those will run you anywhere, depending upon the size of your pool and your body mass, anywhere from a couple $1,000 up to $10,000. So this is not expensive. And then when you see that works, do the whole house. My entire house is 100% solar. And it's interesting, when I want to see how much I could turn on in the house before the meter, the electric meter, actually ran, meaning that I was paying the utility electric company instead of paying them nothing. It stayed at zero, meaning not a penny was I spending for electricity. Two full refrigerators and a freezer. Two televisions on, a complete computer system on, broadcasting system on, internet system on, and about 15 lights on. All that before it even registered at all. So you can run an awful lot. Now let's just say that this solar storm comes and you've geared up, you have a surge protector on your system and you have redundancy, you have a backup system, you have solar and then you have propane. I would suggest 1,000 gallons and a propane generator. Then no matter what happens, you've got water, you've got electricity, and with that you can still have quality of life. So I've done it, and when I show people, I don't pay a nickel to run any of this. And I started everything I just told you exactly what I did, is, you know, one at a time. And then the state will give you a refund check, and plus you get upwards 35% tax write-off. So when you consider the refund from the state and the tax write-off, you're repaying your bill very quickly, within 2 years. And then it will last for decades. That's just my suggestion to you. Now, some of the other things that are important with the environment, then I'm going to take your calls at 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. And I'm going to tell my engineer that since I am on location and cannot get the communication by satellite or by internet, that he'll just let me know who's on and where they're from, and then we'll put people up there. And that'll just take us a second. All right. Now, this is from Daniel Moss on Common Grounds, and he says the following. Debating the future of our world's water, I'll quote this, the World Water Council, the conveyor of the World Water Forum, sure knows its market. At their recent global gathering held in Marseille, France, they tapped into the thirst of governments, developing agencies, banks, NGOs, and private water operators for a conversation about water services and managing the growing water crisis, as well as a shot at lucrative contracts. All of the exhibition booths were about desalinization companies and private firms like Suez and Veolia, the biggest in the industry. And the event had the feel of a trade show and the price tag of the Super Bowl. And then it goes on to talk about, this is the sixth year in a row they've done this. But then there's no discussion about how do we get water where it's scarce to where people need it. How do we better manage water in areas, including the United States, where people are clueless that they're running out of water, like in Arizona, in Nevada, you're running out of water. In Colorado, you're running out of water, and you're going to find yourself in a lot of legal actions because you're going to want to keep the snow melt off that becomes water. But you've already signed a contract with California, so they get the water before you do. So you've given that away. And the law is precedent on that, and there's a high probability that you won't get your water. So anyhow, there's an enormous amount of problems with water today, and that's why I'm suggesting read the article, the most sustainable places to live in the world. It's on GaryNoll.com. That show you, first it shows you where the nuclear power plants are. You don't want to be anywhere near those. But it also shows you where there's aquifers and groundwater. Now, for anyone looking for property, and I know a lot of you are, and that's a wise thing, first thing you should do is, besides making sure you're not near hydrofracking and you can do that through Google, and you can do it through examining all the maps, and nuclear power plant, you got to make sure, is there a source of water, and what is the source, and then sample the source, and how much of it's there, and how many people are using it, because ideally you want 100% mineral rights. Never buy property where you don't own 100% of the mineral rights. Crucial, and no one ever looks to know whether or not they own the mineral rights. And the realtors will say, "Don't worry about the mineral rights. You know, you're not going to go drilling for gas or oil, are you?" No. And then you sign the contract not to realize that someone else is drilling for gas and oil, and they can come in by law and put up an oil well right next door to your house. That's right. The law's on their side. They had the lobbyist design those laws for them, not you. So make sure that you have abundance of water and quality soil. Both are easy to test. That is going to be the key to the future. But then we find out that all of these World Water Council are just about who can privatize different water sources. And what's happening, as desperate as countries are and as towns are and states are, they're privatizing different things, including water. And then a company comes in. They're not interested in upgrading the system. They're not interested in the quality of the water. They're just interested in that they can meter it, so you have to pay for it. So a lot of Americans are going to find that in the very near future, around the world as well, when you turn on the tap, unless you've paid a water bill, a very high water bill, you're not going to be able to get any water. And that's what's going on. So just remember, you heard it here, that pay attention wherever possible. Go to any meetings. Look at the state. Don't allow privatization of water. All right? Very important. And finally here, from EchoWatch, the gas industry spin can't cover up the problems caused by fracking. And I'll quote this from Paul Galley. It says, it's like some in the gas industry are living in a different universe than the rest of us when it comes to the risks from shale gas extraction via fracking. Call it the spin zone. At a Wall Street Journal conference last week, Chesapeake Energy CEO Aubrey McClendon told attendees he's unaware of any problems resulting from the thousands of fracking wells drilled in Fort Worth, Texas in recent years. McClendon peevishly referred to the fracking-related air pollution concerns I raised at the conference as, quote, environmental nonsense. Well, not true. In December of last year, the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality reported that oil and gas operations in the Dallas-Fort Worth region emit more smog-causing volatile organic compounds than all cars, trucks, buses, and other mobile sources in the area combined. That wasn't true before the fracking boom. The data previously shows that the volatile organic compounds in the air from oil and gas have increased 60% in just the last 6 years. Ozone, a corrosive gas that can exacerbate asthma and other pulmonary diseases, is created when these volatile organic compounds from petroleum and operations mix with heat and sunlight. In 2011, Dallas-Fort Worth violated federal ozone standards on more days than anywhere else in Texas. And Dallas-Fort Worth is a particularly extreme example of higher air pollution in Texas, according to David Allen, a chemical engineer professor and state air quality program director. In 2010, the state found elevated levels of benzene around 21 gas fields out of 94 it tested in the Barnett Shale. According to the toxicologist Shannon Etheridge, their monitors in the Barnett Shale pull, quote, some of the highest benzene concentrations we've monitored in the state. In Texas, which has about 93,000 natural gas wells, just in 2011, up from 58,000 a dozen years ago, a hospital system in six counties with some of the heaviest drilling, including the Barnett Shale region, found that, quote, children in the community ages 6 to 9 years are 300% more likely to have asthma than the average for that age group in the state of Texas. According to Baylor University, childhood asthma rates in the Tarrant County area of the Barnett Shale were more than double the national average. So, that's just a tiny amount of the research that he showed that wherever you have gas hydrofracking, you're going to have all other forms of pollutants in the water and in the air. And that's going to damage people. Now, keep that in mind, and that's one more reason that we should stay diligent in not allowing New York and other places just to hydrofrack. And the governor and the state legislators who've been heavily lobbied by the pro-gas hydrofracking industry, they want about 80,000 gas hydrofracking wells throughout New York State. And there's a high probability that unless the public really comes out in force and says no to gas hydrofracking in New York, it'll happen. When that happens, then New York State, you can write it off as it's going to end up with nothing but multiple water and air and soil pollution messes for the foreseeable future. And that's why I'm not looking for homestead property in New York. I'm Gary Nall. Your turn. The rest of the show's over to you. 888-874-4888. We're going to come back in a moment and start taking your calls, and we will do that for the rest of the program. Say hello to Aaron from Clark, New Jersey. Hi, Aaron. Disconnected. All right. Well, we'll go to Jim from Toronto. Jim, your turn.
Hello, Gary. Yeah, my question today is about addictions and if addictions are destructive, then what purpose do they serve then?
What type of addictions?
Well, it would be
Get it out, Jim.
Gary.
What is it? What?
Sex addiction, Gary.
Well, first, I don't believe there is any such thing as a sex addiction, and I don't believe they're sex addicts. Okay. And more often than not, when a person has to go into sexual addiction counseling, it's because they've been caught engaged in sexual activity with someone other than their committed partner. Since when does having sex whenever you wish with a consenting adult become addictive? It's pleasurable. Otherwise, then you're going to say that if someone masturbates, then somehow there's something wrong with them if they masturbate more than a national average. Not true. Whatever you choose to do with your sex life is your business and your partner. It is not for anyone to judge it. And that's why I'm appalled at the interest people show in pornography and in other people's sex life, especially the celebrities. Why is it important to them? If a person has their own vital, creative, happy, exciting, pleasurable sex life, I can assure you they are not going to have interest in anyone else's sex life. But when you do not have a fulfilling sex life, when you are not manifesting your own primal energies in a constructive way, whether it's creatively or spiritually, in intimacy or not, and no one else should tell you what is right and wrong for you, because then you're not having sex. You're only having proxy sex. Someone else is telling you what you should and shouldn't do, and you're kind of thinking, well, I'm going to stay within these boundaries. I don't believe there should be any boundaries when consenting adults have sex. They're exchanging energy, they're exchanging passion, they're exchanging excitement, they're exchanging creativity, if they're at all interesting, and therefore don't label it as addictive. Just label it as someone who's having pleasure. And if you're not, watch how critical people become of other people who are engaged in healthy, happy, joyful sex. All we talk about is safe sex. Fine, we should engage in safe sex, but why shouldn't we also talk about engaging in happy sex, vital sex? And so we're not. We're a very sexually frustrated, highly repressed society. Even at the height of the sexual revolution, less than 3% of gays and 3% of heterosexuals engaged in sexual liberation. 3%. You would have thought everyone in America was having sex all the time because we all became voyeurs to those who were willing to talk about or exhibit sexuality. So when a person can only feel comfortable in the darkness of their own room watching something on a screen where other people are engaged instead of having the ability to communicate their needs with other people, then the problem is not pornography. The problem is not looking in on someone else's sex life. The problem is the person not being able to have a commitment or the resource to have a happy, positive sex life themselves. That is not addictive. Hope that answers your question.
Thank you, Gary.
Okay. All the best to you. Let's say hello to Flory from Miami. Flory, you're on the air.
Hi, Gary. My question is, I have some osteoporosis because of a result of chemotherapy and radiation when I had breast cancer, and I was given RECLASP. Instead, I decided to take 4,000 milligrams of calcium plus magnesium and a lot of vitamin K and K2. My oncologist took me off the vitamin K. He says that because of my breast cancer background, I already have a tendency to coagulate, and the vitamin K creates blood clots. And I am puzzled what to do.
All right. Well, I would back it up a moment. You're asking for protocol after an event instead of what happens to prevent something in the first place. So if you go back, what you're looking at is osteoporosis. And osteoporosis, we know, is when the bones gradually weaken and the internal structure thins and it makes us susceptible to fractures. In fact, the word osteoporosis derives from Latin, literally meaning porous bones. And what we have to do is realize that chemotherapy, thyroid hormones, corticosteroids, anticonvulsants all thin the bones. They're all causing osteoporosis. And that's not taken into account when people are looking at what can I do with a therapy that could both fight the cancer, in your case breast cancer, and there are holistic breast cancer protocols, and also protect your bones. And what's interesting, a holistic approach to breast cancer is also a holistic approach to osteoporosis. It not only protects the breast, but it also protects the bones. That's what's interesting, where an orthodox approach to breast cancer both is not statistically significant in helping the person with breast cancer, but does definitely devastate the bones. The bone is constantly restoring itself. Cells called osteoblasts are what actually make your bones. And other cells called osteoclasts are needed to remove old bone. And so you can then have the mineral in the body that allows this to happen. And the osteoclasts break down the bone more quickly than it's replaced, and bone tends to become less dense and therefore likely to break. And most people's bones are at their maximum strength when they're about 25 years of age. And then they start to accelerate bone loss. And women, as they approach menopause, go through perimenopause, menopause, and postmenopause, that's when they don't accumulate enough bone mass. And as a result, they end up with osteoporosis. And what osteoporosis does, it simply means measuring your bone density. And then you determine whether or not you're in a category or not. For example, the bone density measurement is referred to as a T-score, or an SD, standard deviation score. And T-scores of less than one standard deviation indicate a low risk of fracture. And T-scores of 1 to 2 are considered to indicate osteopenia. And T-scores of more than 2.5 standard deviation from the norm confirm a diagnosis of osteoporosis. So what do we do? What do we do first to prevent osteoporosis? And what do we do if we've had treatment? You have to detoxify. And the more you detoxify, the different ways that you affect the blood, both as in an anticoagulant and a coagulant manner. That's one of the reasons that when people are on blood pressure-lowering medication and then they can't have certain green vegetables, they can't have certain vitamins, because those are known to thin the blood, and you don't want to overthin the blood, because then a person wouldn't clot if they should cut themselves, and like hemophiliac, would bleed. So what can we do? Well, that's where you begin to change your whole biochemistry over, and you can do that. But you must do that in the guidance of a holistic medical professional who can monitor your blood chemistry as it's being done. Can it be done? You bet. Absolutely. So you have to look at your right to take your calcium as directed, but boron, about 3 milligrams, is essential to that. Also copper, 3 milligrams, and then glucosamine plus chondroitin. That's normal bone and connective tissue development. You didn't mention magnesium earlier. Magnesium is also anti-cancer, generally 1,000 milligrams. And silica, which supplies silicon for calcium utilization and bone strength. And then the soy isoflavones, which A, help prevent breast cancer substantially, about 50 milligrams a day, but I would go to 150 milligrams. And they have an estrogenic effect on the body. And estrogen in the phytoestrogens promotes bone mass. And then the B-complex provides strength to the bone tissue and promotes the production of progesterone, which is also important. B12, 1,000 to 2,000 micrograms. Vitamin D, which is important for calcium to be absorbed. Now, you said your doctor was concerned about taking excess vitamin K. He is correct. But also, vitamin K is essential for the production of bone protein. L-lysine and L-arginine are also essential to aid in calcium absorption and connective tissue strength. And then MSM, which is a methyl sulfur, is natural to the body and helps the cells. And I would also look at vitamin C is important in that. And then feverfew is great as an anti-inflammatory if you have osteoporosis. Horsetail and oat straw contain silica and help with osteoporosis, and the red clover isoflavones mimic the effect of estrogen and slow the breakdown of bone mass, and eat plenty of high-quality calcium and magnesium and vitamin D-rich foods, dandelion greens, dark green vegetables, hazelnuts, kale, oats, sea vegetables, sesame seeds, soybeans, tahini, tofu, and whole grains. That whole grains contain a substance that binds with calcium and prevents its uptake. So make sure that you have a dominance of legumes with a lower amount of that. But onion and garlic every day is important as well. Hope that helps you. All the best to you, Flory.
Thank you, Gary.
Now let's say hello to Patricia from Long Island. Hi, Patricia.
Hi, Gary. Great to talk to you tonight. I wanted to ask a question based on Epstein-Barr virus. What juices would you suggest for that?
Epstein-Barr, how bad is it?
Oh, I've already had 24 ozone sessions, but at this point I can't continue that. It's not that bad. No, it was, it was worse, but it's much better now.
Okay, because that wouldn't be my, it wouldn't be, the juicing would be my approach. It would be taking a combination of garlic, a lysine, vitamin C, and quercetin in combination at high doses.
Okay.
Every day. That would be what I would get into my system.
Okay.
Then I would also take, now here's the issue with ideally, because when I see people, they're almost always very sick.
Mm.
So I'm going to recommend dosages that some people shouldn't be taking.
Right.
For example, if someone's coming down with a cold or flu, I'm going to tell them to take wild oregano oil. But most people, if they took the amount I would suggest, would say, gee whiz, that burns my mouth. I can't take that. And indeed, it can cause a burning, temporary burning
right.
sensation. But you can take anywhere from 1 to 3 drops in a diluted tea, like green tea,
mm-hmm.
but then take curcumin
right.
in with the tea, and maybe 500 milligrams of green tea catechins with that, and suddenly that makes enormous difference. Now, at the beginning of the program, I talked about the importance of berries.
Yes.
Well, for all viruses, have berries mixed with bitter melon. That's a great juice.
Right.
Half bitter melon, half berries.
Mm-hmm.
And specifically the raspberries and wild blueberries and tart cherries.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And, Gary, speaking of the bitter melon, is it, you used to suggest to go to an Asian market. I do frequent the local farmer's market, the food co-op, but I was wondering if it's still safe to buy things in the Asian market.
Yes, it is, because most of that which is in the Asian market is coming in from Long Island. Don't confuse what you see sold from where it comes. Most of it's not coming from China, unless it's sea vegetables.
Right.
But it's more of the Japanese market you have to be concerned about.
Right.
I would not be buying dried shiitake mushrooms or dried seaweeds from Japan at all.
Fabulous. Right. Right.
Because you're just running a big risk at that point.
Absolutely. Thank you so very much.
All the best to you.
Take care on the road.
All right. Let's say hello to Steve in Los Angeles. Steve, your turn. You're up.
Hi, Gary.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
Sure can.
Okay. I just want to let you know I listen a lot to you, and I'm getting a lot out of it, and I'm working toward improving a lot. I'm not able to hear everything, though, and I know you've dealt with prostate a lot, so I apologize for the question. But I've got my back up against the wall. I'm on Medicaid. I can't really afford a holistic doctor. I do have your books. I don't know really how to use. I mean, you mentioned a lot of things, but not how much, how often, and all that. And
Let's back up a moment. First, it's not money in and of itself that determines the quality of care that a person receives. It is the integratedness of how they approach any condition that they're concerned about. Now, what do I mean by that? What I mean is that eating healthy is about one half the cost of eating the normal American diet. And it's even less expensive to eat healthy than it is to eat the processed American diet. And just as one example, ask yourself, what is the cost of a pound of potato chips? Because they don't sell them in a pound. They sell them generally in 3-ounce bags. And compare that to an organic potato. The organic potato is very important, and including the alpha-lipoic acid that's in there for people with any form of enlarged or prostate problems at all. So what is it about the prostate that we should be concerned about, and what would be an inexpensive approach to help that? Now, you see the difference in approaching something without acting like a victim?
Right. I am doing a protocol. I'm trying to.
Okay.
I'm working at it.
Okay. Again, working at it, trying, those are unnecessary. All you have to do is just do it. And everything that I mentioned on a protocol gives you boundaries and ranges. Or it gives you as directed, which means on a bottle. So if you look at a bottle and the bottle says take 200 milligrams once a day, that's what you do. There's no such thing as a non-specific protocol. I've never given one in my career. So when you look at the prostate, what are you looking at? You're looking at a gland that's just a little larger than a walnut. And it's right at the base of the bladder and encircles the urethra. And that's, as we know, that's where we vacate urine. And it produces a prosthetic fluid. And that's what makes up the bulk of a male ejaculate. And it also is where the nourishing part of the sperm comes from, because that's where the nourishment is infused. Now, when you look at most men who are developing prostate cancer, it's rare in before the age of 50. And then it gets increasingly more common the older person gets. It's a very slow manifesting cancer. But before it becomes cancerous, it becomes inflamed. And before it becomes inflamed, we have to have a whole lifetime of doing something that is creating pro-inflammatory agents into the diet. And that's why I've said 100 times, 1,000 times, I'll continue to say it, there's no such thing as a non-consequence of eating something or drinking something that's bad. You just don't know when the consequence will manifest. You don't know when there'll be a tipping. So we really have to make ourselves aware that we can only make positive choices. And there should be no room for anything else except positive choices. That's the whole issue. Now, that said, what can we do? Well, there's a lot we can do. A lot that's not expensive. For example, I would suggest getting some colostrum. Now, that's known to be a super booster of the immune system. And it has a lot of quality to it, especially if you get it organic. I think Jarrow, J-A-R-R-O-W, Formulas has one. Very good for the prostate. But so is DMG, dimethylglycine. And that is enhancing oxygen uptake. To juice garlic once a day, and then to pour maybe 2 ounces of garlic into other diluted juices throughout the day. Now, some people can tolerate it, other people find it rough to take, but if you take apple juice and you put garlic in, it's generally very palatable and not that difficult to take. I would also use proteolytic enzymes. In fact, to do that, I would go to a supermarket and just say, could you set aside all of the hearts of pineapple that you're otherwise going to throw away? Because that is the most powerful form of papain and proteolytic enzymes that you're going to be able to get, bromelain. And bromelain, papain comes from the pineapple, papaya, and bromelain, combine those two. And that makes an enormous anti-inflammatory action in the body, including for the prostate. Then you can use wheatgrass juice and vitamin A, which also is great for the prostate. Vitamin C, as much as you can get in your body each day. It's terrific. Why? A, it's anti-cancer, and in a big way, but it also helps inhibit cancer from spreading out the prostate. And then vitamin D3. So that's just getting some sunlight. And the maitake mushroom, that's good. Probiotics are good. And also black radish, dandelion, milk thistle, red clover, all great for you. Echinacea, powdiarco, suma, all have anti-cancer properties. And Damiana, very important, also for the prostate. Gravel root, hydrangea, oat straw, Yuva ursi, also terrific, can help the prostate. And modified citrus pectin really inhibits the growth of cancer cells. And pygeum, P-Y-G-E-U-M, and saw palmetto, extremely important, as is resveratrol, about four times a day, and along with curcumin. So those are the things that I would suggest. Juicing, juicing, juicing. The more you juice, the better it's going to be, the healthier prostate. And just stay away from caffeine in any form. Stay away from sugar, artificial sweeteners, meat, fried food, alcohol in any form, in any quantity, dairy and gluten in any form, in any quantity. And when you do that, Steve, you should see some major progress. Okay. Thanks for your call, Steve. All the best to you. And we're out of time. Wow, this hour flew. Thank you all for your calls and staying with me and learning. And I look forward to sharing a lot this week.